Welcome to the Subscription Maker Podcast. This is your host, Zachary Alexander, Enterprise Architect at SubscriptionMaker.net. Please hit the subscribe button wherever you get your podcast so that you won't miss any new episodes. Today, we are talking with Marie Incontrada. Marie is an author, consultant, and musician. Marie is the owner of Incontrada Consulting, which specializes in helping clients get TED Talks, podcasts, guest spots, and other social media services. The reason that we are talking with Marie is to show that you don't have to start with a grandiose plan to execute a well-architected pivot. You can be someone that works odd jobs by day and musician by night. You can still pivot to become a success in life. Marie, welcome to the Subscription Maker Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
I got to start by asking, what's it like to play Carnegie Hall?
Well, it's everything that everybody thinks it will be. You know, it's one of those things that as a musician, especially when you're young and you're learning, that's the thing, right? Practice so that you can get to play Carnegie Hall. And it was awesome. I actually, I rented the Zankel Hall within Carnegie Hall for my band's performance in 2017. And it was awesome.
Why did you feel you needed to pivot to something else?
As a classical and jazz musician living in New York, the reality that they don't tell you when you're in school for music is that you can be playing Carnegie Hall, right? You can be at the top of your career, which my band, at the time called the Eco Music Big Band was. We were, you know, front runners in the free jazz scene in New York. You know, we were playing places like Joe's Pub and at the Blue Note and everything like that. You can do all that and still be really broke. And I was, you know, living in a studio apartment with nothing but my bed and my piano, and working every odd job that I could find and, you know, really trying to make my living with music. And I was coming home with less than 15 grand a year, most years. So, that, you know, that it's really easy to burn out on that. And, what I was seeing is that everybody in my field was burned out, right? Nobody's happy when they're playing 3 gigs a night, 7 nights a week in 3 different places to make ends meet on top of maybe teaching or something else. Nobody's happy when they're not playing the music they want to play, et cetera. So after the Carnegie Hall show, I said, okay, I have to take a step back. I had already been about a year into my current business. And I said, okay, let me take a step back. Let me see where this is going. And I still do music. I actually made the pivot into musical theater, and now I run my business by day and do music also by day or sometimes at night.
What do you think makes for a great pivot?
I think really being willing to change what you think your life is going to look like. Because if you had asked me, gosh, 10 years ago, what will you do for the rest of your life? I would have said, be a musician. And that's it, because I didn't think I was good at anything else. I didn't think I would like anything else. I didn't think I would be happy doing anything else. But, I really found another love in being an entrepreneur. And that doesn't mean that I'm not still a musician. It doesn't mean that I'm not still an artist. It just means that I had to change the outlook of what my life looks like.
Tell us a little about Incontrada Consulting.
So I started 4 years ago as a virtual assistant. A friend of mine, who is a very well-known and unsuccessful entrepreneur in my space, Dory Clark, she was a longtime friend of mine, and she sent me a text message one day and said, I have an idea for you, quit your job. And I said, I'm sorry, what? But it turns out that she kind of had a plan in mind for me, and that was to become a virtual assistant, and which is basically like an executive assistant, except you do it remotely. And she said, you know, you'll have all this time for your music. You'll probably make as much money, if not more. And I don't think she realized how little I was making as a musician. So she helped me get started with my first couple of clients. You know, she kind of put my name out there. And right away, I was making more than I had been as a musician. And so, and then over time, people started coming to me for 3 things. And those things were social media, podcast booking, and then eventually TEDx, my TEDx offering. And so over time, as my success rate and my social proof and my credibility built, I changed my pricing structures and I became a consultant. And now we're a 8-person team. So.
So why TEDx and podcasts?
So that's a great question. So all of that happened by accident. Podcasts, especially now, you know, the time that we're in with COVID-19, right? You know, COVID has us all staying home. But before that, people were listening to podcasts on their commute. They were listening to podcasts while they worked. It's a great way to learn and to learn, you know, sort of get to know people that you normally wouldn't get to know, build your platform and everything like that. So podcast is one of those really great mediums for people with a book or people with a course or something like that, because you will get to an audience that you didn't previously know. And for TED Talks, well, being associated with the TED or TEDx brand is the best thing, arguably, that you can do for your credibility and your expertise. As you know, TED is a phenomenon and it's 30 years old, but it's even more relevant today, I think, because, you know, it's a meme, right? Thank you for coming to my TED talk is a meme nowadays. And that's really a sign that it's out there, right? It's important. When you stand on that red rug with a TEDx sign behind you, people associate you with credibility. They're more likely to watch your 10 or 15 minute TED talk than read your book.
Do you offer or provide other social media services?
So for social media, that's sort of what pays the bills for the business. Always, we always have social media clients, because what happens is folks work with us pretty much ongoingly with social media. And then they might say, okay, now's the time that I want to do a TED talk, or now's the time that I want to do, you know, 3 months of podcasts, or whatever the case is. So, social media is sort of the baseline. And we have other things that we do. You know, we're now offering it. We've recently done a little bit of a business pivot and added a couple of, offerings, including doing a virtual summit, done for you virtual summits and things like that. So, everything sort of has to do with building your online credibility.
Do you offer subscription services?
I don't at the moment.
Not yet.
Exactly. a couple of my colleagues and I are creating courses that eventually will have subscription services, like a Facebook group and things like that. So it's funny, this is fortuitous, because I am starting to pivot into what subscription looks like.
Okay, let's shift a little bit and talk more about the virtual assistant mm-hmm. industry. What do you think the outlook will be post-coronavirus?
What I'm seeing is that, of course, my client base is, I work with a lot of speakers and I work with a lot of online entrepreneurs. And what I'm seeing is that people are either doing one of two things. They're either all their business has evaporated because they just do in-person speaking, or they're doubling down on online and investing in online branding and services and things like that. So with people being less likely to leave their houses, not just now, but in the next 3, 4, 5, 6 months, you know, we're not going to go back to business as usual right away, right? I think there is going to be, you know, remote work is here to stay, and it was here to stay, but now it's here to stay on a much grander scale. So I think that it's a great time to become a virtual assistant.
The reason I ask is because I believe that starting a virtual assistant's business is genius when it comes to getting into subscription services. Mm-hmm. How would you suggest someone get started?
So in order to get started, right, in order to make a business, you can have the branding, you can have, you know, an LLC, you can have a bank account, but you don't have a business until you have clients, or at least one client, right? So the important thing to do, and this is something that I did by accident, because if I would have started out making a consulting agency from scratch, I probably would have missed the mark. One of the best things you can do as a virtual assistant is see what people need from you. Get in front of your prospective clients. You know, even if you start with one client, which I did, you know, I was starting with one person making, you know, a few hundred bucks a month while I was transitioning out of my teaching job. You know, see what they want from you. Ask them what they need. And the more needs you can fill, if you can fill a need that they have, that's the market speaking to you. The market will always tell you what it wants from you if you listen, and the market will also tell you if you stop serving. So if you stop giving people what they need, they won't pay you anymore, right? That's a big indicator. And that's, you know, that may not necessarily be your fault. Needs change, especially in this time, right? Needs are different than they were even a month ago. So I had to do it too. I had to pivot. I had to learn how to do virtual summits and things like that so that I can continue to serve my clients and continue to find new clients and stay in business.
Let's talk about a little bit about what it means to be a great podcast guest.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. That is a fantastic question because, you know, that's something that I coach my clients on unofficially, right? So in order to be a great guest, you have to be willing to have a conversation. It cannot, even if you're doing podcasts to sell a book or a course or a service of yours, you can't get on a conversation with only the willingness to sell, right? So if I got on this conversation and I was like, well, I have this new offering, you know, here's why you should work with me.
If every answer leads back to a reason why you should buy your course or whatever.
Exactly. This conversation probably would have been over already, right? You know, and it would be all around. You wouldn't be excited to release the episode. I probably wouldn't care. You know, I probably would sit there and be like, well, I didn't get anything out of that. Meanwhile, we came in, had a conversation before this. We got to know each other a little bit, right? So, and the audience knows that, right? This is audio only, but the audience knows that we have a rapport. They know I'm not here just to sell, right? So that's one thing. The other thing is be present. You know, it's harder nowadays when people have kids home and things like that, but, you know, really try to take some quiet time, really try to, you know, be in that conversation. Otherwise, people know that you're not paying attention. So,
I guess in fairness, I got to ask, what does it take to be a great podcast host?
That's a great question. you know, doing your homework. You know, I don't know if you do your homework with everybody, but you certainly did your homework with me. You know, you're asking good questions. You know, you're present. You don't have canned questions. Some of these questions might be the same that you ask for everybody, but you know, you have.
No, actually, they're different. There.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so some of these questions aren't standard questions then.
I ask a few questions in the beginning about the pivot just to mm-hmm. make sure that we hit that.
Yeah.
And then everything else is whatever the guest is, whatever makes the guest interesting.
That's awesome. See, that's a great podcast host. The other thing is being organized, right? Don't send 85 emails before you send the link, right? You know, send all the information you need, you know, one or two emails, even three emails with pertinent information is great. Send a reminder because people get busy and people get, you know, they get forgetful. So if you want somebody to show up, make sure you send a reminder the day before.
What are the red flags you should look for?
For a podcast host or a podcast guest?
Both.
Or both. okay, so for a host, poor sound quality is a big thing. So if they're recording on, you know, if they don't sound good to you on the call, that's a big red flag. You know, being disorganized, not getting you the information that you need in order to be successful on a podcast. And you know, my big pet peeve is, you know, I ask everybody the same three questions, and then they don't even listen to the answer. That to me is a big red flag, right? In terms of a guest, if a guest won't be present with you, it's best to, you know, just say, hey, listen, let's do this another time, right? You know, like if I had, you know, my phone ringing and 85 different things, and I was also checking my email while I was doing this, you know, that's something to look out for.
Next, let's get more into the TED Talks. Mm-hmm. How should you prepare for TED Talk?
So TED's mission is ideas worth spreading. And what they mean by ideas worth spreading is something that's global, actionable, and has really strong takeaways. Okay, so it's not a lecture. It's not an academic dissertation defense, right? It's not a 15-minute version of your keynote. Okay, so those are three really important things. Your idea should be your own, and it should be something, it's not just a motivational story or an exciting story or a motivational speech. It's, at the end of it, your audience should have a few things that they can implement right now. It should also be in service of everybody. Okay, that's really important, because I work with a lot of keynote speakers, okay? And they might serve leaders only. They might only speak to a certain demographic of the population. And that's very common with a keynote. But with a TED Talk, you want to be talking to everybody, okay? So for example, in my previous life, one of the things that I did was I was an adjunct lecturer to undergrad musicians. Now, I could talk for 45 minutes to a group of undergrads and tell them about the finer points of jazz, right? And, you know, here's what a 13th chord sounds like, and here's why that's important, and here's what you need to know, you know. And here's why Love Supreme is the most important piece of music ever, you know. But that's not for the TED stage. If you cannot meet the global audience where they are, then a TEDx is not the right medium for you. So you have to be able to do that at the outset.
What do you look for when you're vetting clients?
So I look for those things. Those are the three, those are the big things that I, before I will sign on with somebody, because my TEDx offering is, I pitch, my team pitches on behalf of the client. So we have this conversation first. We talk about the idea. The nugget of the idea already has to be there. I can help you hone it, and I can help you sort of position yourself really well so that an organizer will take you, right? But this has to be there. If somebody comes on a call and says, hey, I only speak to, I don't know, women leaders, right? Women CEOs. That's the only people I speak to. And that's what my TED Talk is about. No, I can't work with you. Right. Because I want to retain my success rate too.
So I got to throw you a curveball.
Yep.
You talked about being an adjunct professor. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
Well, I was really young when I did it. I was still in grad school. So this is something that I very rarely talk about. I graduated high school early. And so I was 22 when I was in graduate school adjuncting, my second year of graduate school adjuncting as an adjunct lecturer. And it was trial by fire, you know, to be able to stand up in front of, you know, a bunch of 18-year-olds, and I was only a few years older than them, was really hard. It was really fun. But, you know, higher education is not always the most stable work if you're not a tenure track professor. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. But there came a point where I was just like, I can't. I have to go have a career as a musician for a while.
The reason I ask that is On this podcast, we talk a lot about the gig economy and what's happening, and something I'm calling the workforce 50-50. It's the point at which people, 50% of Americans are engaged as either freelancers or contingent professionals. Adjunct professors are contingent professionals.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to really bring that out, because a lot of times I haven't heard a lot of people talking about that. I think that that's something that's really lurking in society. So I wanted to thank you for going there with me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, it's not something that a lot of people realize, right? Because we think, you know, I wasn't officially a professor. I don't have a PhD. I did want to go that way, but people called me professor. That comes with a certain amount of prestige, clout, et cetera, you know, but the truth is that I was just as broke as I was as a musician when I was a professor, and I used air quotes there. Yeah, exactly.
So are you a member of the National Speakers Association?
I am not. I speak a little bit.
Okay.
So I do a little bit of speaking. It's usually with the goal of networking and you know, building my platform and getting sort of my expertise and my services out there. But I haven't as of yet built speaking into a viable income stream, but we're getting, I'm confident we'll get there. You know, it's like anything, it's a step up. So
now for some softball correct questions.
Sure.
Let's talk a little bit about community building.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about community building, and how would you go about it?
Well, that's an excellent question. And I think that COVID-19 provides us with a really interesting opportunity. I am currently building a few communities online. And, you know, had you asked me this question a month ago, I probably would have said, no, I don't really have the time.
Don't see the value in it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, yes, exactly. I mean, not that I didn't see the value in it, because I am in some online communities that are extremely valuable, but I would have been like, no, I just don't have the time. Now, oh my gosh, that's where your people are. Is, you know, if you build a good online community, you can do anything. You know, there's a story of, oh gosh, I forget his name, but the producer of Godspell, the musical, has a big online community, and he is the only person in that space doing that, right? And that gave him so much leverage to create that. So that's the kind of thing that, you know, if you have an online community, you can build your business faster than anybody. You can, you know, have better conversations, et cetera.
Now we have to divert some. I actually knew people from who Godspell is, as if I remember correctly, was a bunch of people from Carnegie Mellon that couldn't find work in New York.
Oh, is that true?
I believe.
Is that true?
So. Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah. So they couldn't find work in New York. And the guy that played Rinko on Hill Street Blues was also part of the Carnegie Mellon Mafia. So he goes to New York, and he finds out, well, all my buddies are doing it. And they said, no, we got all the performance we need. Why don't we make you the producer? And that's how he spent his time running around talking with people.
That's so cool. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I had like heard that story secondhand and was like,
oh yeah.
So you even know more about it than I do.
Well, he came to University of Missouri, Kansas City.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as part of the day after the movie, when they did the day after, one of the stipulations was that they would have to work with the university. And he came and did a workshop, and his big takeaway was, you or they.
Yeah.
So he said, don't ever let someone tell you that you can't do something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to ever hear you say that they won't let me.
Yeah.
Because you are they.
Oh, I love that. I love that. That's, yeah. Wow. That's, I did not expect to be talking about that, but I love that. I love that you know that. You know what I mean? I'm like, this is great.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
What would you say to someone starting out, starting their own community?
Be present. And, okay. You know, much like starting your business, this is an underrated thing, but it bears, and that's why I think it bears repeating so much. See what they want, right? Talk to them, see which of their needs you can fill, right? In sales, they call this the pain point, right? What keeps you up at night? What's the thing that would be worth it to pay for if I could solve for you? Okay, that's really important.
Would you start with a strategic plan, or would you allow it to evolve organically?
I've let everything that I've done evolve organically, and I've had success with that. I know a lot of folks have been much more strategic, but that just hasn't, you know, the nature of my business has kind of been see where it goes, right? And we've been very lucky, and you know, we've been very fortunate to be able to build the way that we have. So I if you don't have a strategic plan, don't let that stop you.
As we start to wrap up, is there anything you wish more people would ask you?
Well, I wish more people would ask me, you know, how to do that, right? Like, you know, and I feel like I'm a little bit on my soapbox about it, but there's a reason for it, right? You know, I wish people would say, hey, how do I build my business? How do I make sure I'm providing value in the market? Because I think that's really important. And I think that it's something that, you know, as business owners, we forget, you know, especially once we start getting those first successes and we start building, we start scaling, you know, it's easy to say like, look how great I am, you know, but you know, you still have to remember that
ego engages.
Exactly. You know, and I mean, there are times that I'm guilty of it. You know, I take a step back. We doubled year over year. And I'm just like, wow, that's really cool. Like I did that. But the truth is that I still have to, you know, even if I have that moment, I have to go, okay, am I still serving? Right? What do my clients need? Are those needs changing? Let me have a conversation with them and see how I can evolve as they evolve. Because if your clients are doing great work, their needs are going to change too.
That's important. Mm-hmm. So are you planning any new offerings? Anything to break here?
Yeah. Because of COVID-19, we've been opening a few new income streams. One of them being a Done For You virtual summit. We just did a virtual summit for entrepreneurs, and it was, you know, my reason behind doing it was because when in a crisis, I tend to nose to the grindstone and just work. So I said, well, let's do this. Speaking engagements are closing. Let's give our friends an opportunity here. And you know, it helped in building my list. It helped in, you know, getting new clients in the door and things like that. So, we're piloting a new offering for virtual summits. We have a couple of online courses coming out, including a TEDx happy hour, which is a very low ticket way to start working on your TEDx talk in this time.
I love that. So do you have a landing page up for that yet?
I do. If you go to incontrera.com, it's my last name, incontrera.com. And you go to the courses tab. There's a courses tab, there's a services tab and everything. You can also just send me an email. My email is marie@incontrera.com.
I'll put that in the show notes.
Awesome. Thank you. Find me on LinkedIn, find me on Facebook or Instagram, or you know, almost anywhere online. So
Maria, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
This is your host, Zachary Alexander, enterprise architect at subscriptionmaker.net. Please join us next time as we continue to talk about what it takes to be a successful subscription maker.